Today on What Is YA Anyway, I am interviewing author Ebony Liddell. She wrote her debut book, Love Radio, which came out recently. In this interview, we're talking all about her writing process, her experience in the young adult genre. She's also worked in publishing, and not only does she have great tidbits on craft, but she also speaks a lot to the publishing industry, and it's a really fascinating conversation, so I can't wait for you all to hear it. Let's go. Hi, Ebony. I am so excited to have you on What Is YA Anyway today to talk about your book, Love Radio, and your experiences as a young adult author. But before we dive into some of the questions, can you just tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. So first of all, thank you for having me. My name is Ebony Liddell. I am the author of Love Radio. I also worked in publishing for 10 years. So I have like a lot of like publishing experience on both sides. And this is my debut book. I'm hoping to kind of transition more into the writing space. So it's really exciting to, you know, have this book come out and for people to like it and, you know, for there to be buzz and for me to continue to write.
Absolutely. Well, I loved the book. I just thought it was so cute. And the whole time I read it in one sitting, actually, because I was like, I can't stop reading this. So I just want to tell you that I absolutely adored it.
Thank you so much. It never, like, when people say that to me, because I've gotten it a few times, it's really weird because I know how hard it is to read a book in one sitting. So I'm just so thankful. So thank you for telling me that.
Well, it was like, I just couldn't put it down. The writing just pulls you right in. And all of a sudden I was like, wow, like hours have gone by. So my first question for you is, I know you said you worked in publishing, but what made you want to become an author and specifically a young adult author?
Real answer is I was definitely afraid to write and publish anything for people to read and critique and give negative feedback mostly, and not negative feedback in a sense of like they're not going to, you know, be kind to it, but just like, or not negative feedback in terms of they're going to be disrespectful or they're not going to understand the story. It was more just negative feedback of like, this woman cannot write. And that was like a huge fear. Like, I don't want to be a writer that comes out with the book and it does poorly because I'm a horrible writer. So that was kind of always my fear of writing. I've always had a fear of sharing my work, which is very similar to the main character, Danny, for those of you who've read the book and are not understanding why Danny and me can be so much alike. And then as I started to work in the industry and move up in the industry and read more work by all these authors that I love, I psyched myself out even more. And then finally, there was a point where I just felt like it kept speaking to me. It was really hard to tell myself that it's fine, you don't need to be a writer, you can just be a marketer, which is what I thought I wanted to do. And I think it really is a testament to like how we can limit ourselves.
Absolutely.
Just because we feel like we're taught, or at least I was taught, right, that you grow up, you get a job, you work hard, you retire, you do one thing, you do it for the rest of your life and you love it. And I think I'm starting to realize more that, you know, life is really like you can live multiple lives in one life and you can do one thing and you can pivot and you can go back to that thing or you could try something new and all of those things are okay. And funny enough, you can be good at multiple things. Like, you know, you don't have to just like pigeonhole yourself to one thing or one career or one hobby. And that's what I was starting to realize, that I just felt like I could only do this one thing. But I also saw people in publishing who were successful or fairly successful at doing both. Mostly were white men, you know? And it was also hard to just realize that I can also be in that space and do both things too. And so what I had to do was I had to, of course, find people like me that I felt like I could identify with. And Toni Morrison was one of those people. I, you know, have a nod to Toni in the book, and she really is inspiring in a lot of ways because she was an editor. She worked at PRH. She worked on, you know, all these incredible authors while still, you know, publishing her own work. And I think that was really the catalyst to say like, okay, after I watched The Pieces I Am, which I think came out in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, or 2018, mm-hmm. That's when I decided, okay, Ebony, like, this is this is literally the blueprint. Like, this is what you want to do, so you should go after it. So that's when I really started to take writing like extra seriously, especially because I had like kind of looked into like getting an MFA, and then I was like, no, I don't want to spend any more money. I already went to grad school. It's already too much on me. Yeah. You know, I kept looking at different options and not being thrilled about them. And then it just really boiled down to just write it. Like, you keep trying to find the perfect way to do this thing, and you have to at least start it. So that's kind of how writing was always an interest. It was just something I didn't want to admit.
Yeah, I think that that's such a relatable feeling, like, especially I understand where you're coming from. I work in like doing freelance writing and doing some like book marketing as well. Mm-hmm. And I also have the dream of being an author. But yeah, that fear of like, what if it comes out and it's like, you do get that feedback where like, this person can't write. And then you spent your whole life dreaming of this.
Yeah.
And it's like, kind of just like, oh man, I don't know if I can be vulnerable enough to put that out there, you know? So
exactly.
I love that story.
And I think it's everybody's fear. Like, you know, we could insert any career here and
exactly.
It would be the, everybody would have the same feelings. And it really was just a matter of getting past my fear, which was the hardest part.
So once you sat down to write the book, what did that writing process look like for you?
So the writing process was interesting in that it was kind of like all over the place. I started writing it before work in 2019. I lived in New York. I worked in New York, and it was easy because, well, it was easy for me at the time because I had just switched jobs. And so I was commuting, my commuting time was shorter. And so I kind of looked at that as an opportunity to say, okay, Ebony, you're not commuting an hour anymore. You're commuting like 30 minutes because I lived in Brooklyn and my new job was downtown. And so I realized I could use that time to write. So that's what I did. And then when the pandemic hit, my husband was in vet school. I moved to Blacksburg, Virginia to be with him. Well, I went down there assuming I was going to be there for a month. And then as we all know, that was not the case. And so I was kind of just stuck in the middle of nowhere, bored out of my mind, without friends and family and, you know, a husband with a very intense work schedule. And I just dedicated all of my free time to it. And so it was mostly in the morning because with work, I can get really exhausted mentally just from the day-to-day decision making. And so I'm a morning person. Like, that's when my freshest ideas come to me. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to use that time, that commute time, the time that it took me to get up and get dressed and all of those things, instead of sleeping in, I just decided to use that time to writing. And so I would do that before I would start like my first meeting or Zoom call of the day. And it was really, really helpful. And I started with like just an outline. And from there, I kind of filled in the blanks. And with the outline, I didn't necessarily always like stick to it, but it was really nice for me to have like some structure and then be able to be creative in my own way.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense with the outlining, because sometimes I feel like we write the outlines, we get really stuck in them. So it's nice to hear that like you had it, but you were also thinking like, I can, you know, be creative and put stuff in here that maybe is not in the outline.
Yeah, I was on a panel recently and somebody said like, learn the rules so you can break them. And I do think that's a really good tool to use. I believe Candace said it. It was a really good tool for me to think about, because I didn't realize that I wanted to break the rules. Like, I like structure. I'm a person who likes structure, likes planning. And I'm having to learn that everything can't be planned out and everything is not going to have structure. And sometimes you just got to learn how to wing it. And I'm really learning that being a creative, and I like it because it's forcing me to just get out of my comfort zone. And so when I make a transition in a way that I didn't want to, but I'm liking where it goes, there was that fear of like, okay, Ebony, you're not sticking to the outline. But then it was like, well, so what? Like, just again, like I said, right, just put it out there, like just try it and see if it works. And it would always work. So
now you write from both Danny's perspective and Prince's perspective. So what influenced your decision to do a multiple POV story and have it both be first person perspective versus having like a third person omniscient perspective?
You know, I don't really have the, I wish I had a better answer for like why I went first person instead of third. I just went third. I just went first because it felt right.
Yeah.
And it felt like I wanted to, I knew I wanted to get into the mind of the characters. And I think, okay, so maybe I do have an answer for this now that I think about it. I think because I was writing a love story, and it's specifically a Black love story, and obviously we're seeing a lot more of these, but it is a lot harder to find stories that center, you know, just two teenagers falling in love without it being like a whole bunch of drama and trauma and all of those things, but also being realistic about what these teenagers are going through. I wanted it to be first person because I wanted a reader, specifically a non-Black reader, to read this story and really understand like, oh, like you got to deal with all this, you know, like while you're trying to fall in love. And I think so many people, like, especially in 2020, reading, you know, all the anti-racist books and trying to do, you know, their due diligence to be anti-racist. Like, I think a lot of people just forget the humanity aspect of it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to show that. I just wanted to show in a story that there are these two Black teens, they're dealing with things on their own. Danny is always in her head. So she definitely was the first person I thought of when I wrote the story. And she also was the first person I thought of in terms of like, first person, because she's not a talker. Everything is inside. And so that part was actually easy for me. So that's also probably why I wrote it in first person now that I think about it. And then with Prince, I also just wanted to show his perspective. And I wanted to show it from a teenager who is dealing with a lot too.
Absolutely.
But also you might not understand why he makes the decisions that he makes. So without spoiling it, you know, Prince is trying to figure things out with school and stuff like that. And it's part of like his coping mechanism. But for a teenager like him, you might just see Prince in school and be like, oh, he, you know, sometimes he can be a screw up with his schoolwork. It's because he's doing this radio stuff and like he's just preoccupied with that and he doesn't have his priorities in order. But when you read the story, you realize, oh no, Prince has his priorities in order for his family, you know, and for his friends and for his little community. And that is what's important to him. That's what sustains him too. So all of those things were what I was thinking as I was writing the story. And so I think first person, honestly, probably just it came naturally because of that.
I think that was such a fantastic choice on your part, because part of why I just love a story was that it really does envelop you in Danny's head and in Prince's head. So even if you're coming from a different perspective, you feel like you're looking through their eyes, like you're getting that humanity like you wanted to have. And the writing just really makes you feel like you are them for a minute when you're in those.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah. I also, I just think about sometimes when it comes to like friends, it's really friends, like female friends, especially. I like to have a lot of communicators in my life because I suck at it sometimes. So a lot of my friends are more like extroverted than I am. A lot of people that I'm close with will kind of force conversations out of me that I didn't even know I needed to have until it sort of revealed to me. And it is really like, let's talk this out. And even if you don't want to, you like say the thing that's in your head and you find it, like things become so much more clear. And so I wanted to show, like, with, especially with Danny being in her head, like every step of the way, like this is where she is today. This is how she feels tomorrow. This is how she kind of develops her character into being more trusting. And and it really was based off of like how I sort of like formed my opinions and how I learned to trust in relationships and all of those things. A lot of it came from me really just having to like deal with whatever I was thinking. And a lot of it also came from me talking it through with people I care about.
Yeah. Which brings me to my next question. When you're getting into the headspace of writing from the perspective of a teenager, do you pull a lot from your own personal experiences?
Yeah. So I pull a lot from personal experiences. I pull a lot too from, this is the benefit of what I used to do, from just what I remember and what I've learned in my job. I worked in YA specifically for like 4 or 5 years. And then my first job was at SNS and it was in school library. And so I worked on primarily children's. Mm-hmm. And so those two jobs specifically really were helpful in terms of meeting with more kids. Like I would go to a lot of the festivals and they didn't know who I was. And that was great because while they're in line waiting for one of our authors, I'm just talking to teenagers about, you know, just life, what they love about these books, who are their favorite authors, why, you know, what are their, like, are they interested in writing? And then also just like pulling from like family, friends, and people I know who are teenagers who, you know, I love dearly. All those things are kind of what I pull from. And then also I read through my high school journals too.
Oh, nice.
Just to see like, I mean, it was like pulling teeth, but it was helpful because I realized even though the times are different, those feelings, that age, those same feelings are the same. Like everything I was hearing from like friends who have kids or, you know, cousins or whatever was, it was literally still the same thing. It's just a different like landscape. So all of those were what I pulled from.
So having worked in the YA space, how have you seen this category evolve over the years? And like part of my project is trying to understand why it hasn't been taken as seriously in like as a literary genre in academia. And to some people, it's like, oh, YA, that's just fluff and superficial. So I would love if you could speak to these books and the power that you've seen behind them, whether that's talking to teenagers or with these authors, yourself included, and the way mm-hmm. that this category has really grown.
So that's, I would love to see what you find out because I would also love to hear the answer. I don't know why it's not taken as seriously as it should, if I'm being quite honest. I actually, YA is what saved me, if I'm being honest. I almost like completely quit the publishing industry years ago because I was in the adult space and I felt like the conversations around, you know, acquisitions and the types of books that were being published and the list and the people internally who were being hired, none of it felt like people were really actually looking to affect like real change when it came to diversifying the publishing landscape.
Yeah.
And so I remember from my first job working in children's and loving it. And it was just really a matter of after that job, I knew I wanted to get into like trade marketing, like more consumer facing marketing. And so it was really a matter of like what opportunity presented itself first. And the opportunity that presented itself first to me was adult. And so I went through that path. And I'm very like lucky and thankful. I'm actually very thankful that I did both sides because I feel like I have a pretty decent sense of like both adult and children's. But I went back to YA because I realized that the lists were so much more diverse, that there were like authors who were in different genres. Like it wasn't necessarily, I was working on a book by a Black author that was just about racism. You know, like I was working on a book from a Black author that was fantasy, or, you know, that was historical fiction or contemporary, you know, or a love story. And all of those things were really exciting to me. And it just showed me how YA really pushes the boundaries. Like publishing always changes because of YA, because of children's literature. And we cannot deny that. Like all of the conversations around gender and sexuality, like that stuff has really come to the forefront in the last few years, and that started in children's. And so that is why I don't really understand why people want to shun YA or children's or not give it the credit it deserves, because it's kind of what's keeping the industry like moving forward, number one. Number two, the reason why I specifically love it and why I write in it is because I thought about as a reader and as a writer, like when was reading the most impactful for my life? Like when did it change my life completely? And it was when I was a child. It wasn't when I was an adult. It was when I read that first book that spoke to me that was game changing for me. And whether or not it was a book that spoke to you that you read for pleasure, that you read because you wanted to be a writer, or that you just read because you wanted to read and you learned something that like deeply inspire you to move in a different direction. Like to me, that is kind of the goal of YA. It's to make better people. And my thing is, adults suck. Sorry to say it. Adults suck. They're stuck in their ways. It's harder and harder to change the older and older you get. The hope is that we all get there. But how can you reach people and like actually make better people in this world? I think it's by starting young. And I think it's through children's literature. I think it can be an example or one of the many avenues in which we can hopefully make this world a better place. So that is my thoughts on like children's literature and why it's not taken as seriously as it is, but it really should be. And I do hope that we can get to a point where authors who are in the children's space don't feel like they have to prove themselves. Mm-hmm. The other thing too, I will say about like YA that I love is sometimes with adult work, especially like when I think of adult fiction, you could spend like 10 pages on like a scene, you know, and yeah. It is, and this is no shade to adult fiction, because I love adult fiction, like I live for it. But sometimes authors do the most. And what I love about YA too is that the audience is like, this is too much, you know, like yes. get to the point, you know? And so it really, I think, forces you to be a strong writer. And it's like, you got a tough group of critics. And absolutely. Yeah. And so you have to bring it in. You have to make it fun and engaging and entertaining. And for me, what I like to do is make it fun and engaging, but also like have some real strong life lessons in there. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot of fun and also incredibly hard to write. Like a lot of people were like, how did you pack so much in this story? I don't know. But like, I knew that if I wanted to put the lessons in there that I wanted to put, but I also knew that a YA reader is not going to want to be talked to. Like, I'm not trying to wave my hand at them. I'm just trying to help them navigate life. I had to find that balance. So that is another reason why I love YA is you got to get to the meat.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying, like, it's so true, because it's so hard to have that, like, getting to the meat, like you said, and keeping up that pace where your teenage readers are going to be interested, and also weaving in those important lessons without it sounding like you're lecturing, and you want it to just flow naturally. And that's so much harder than I think a lot of people realize. And digging into these books and noticing, like, look how this author is putting this life lesson in here, and you don't even really notice it, but you're seeing it and you're feeling it because you're with these characters and you're learning alongside them. And that's an art.
Yeah, it is. And it's something that I'm still learning how to do. There are a lot of authors that thankfully I look up to who are kind of guiding me through this journey. But it is an art. And even though I'm very happy and thankful, you know, for this book, it's like, okay, the next book, you have to go a little deeper. You have to try harder. You have to bring more out of yourself. And that is terrifying. But again, it's the audience really challenges you in a way that I think shapes you to be a really strong writer. So I'm very thankful for that.
Now, YA as a category has really made a lot of strides in terms of representation, like you were talking about, but there's obviously still so much work to be done in that area. And I was just wondering if you could speak to your experience being a Black female author in this space and how we can all ensure that this category continues to diversify and show, you know, everyone's story.
It's a lot of things. I think it's one, it's always gatekeepers. There are a lot of people on the inside who make decisions about who get publishes and who doesn't. And so I think we all have to be, and I say we, but I really mean like not like non-BIPOC employees at these companies. Like it's going to be something that you have to think about every single day. You know, like, you have to constantly look at your list and say, what am I doing or not doing? How can I help? What can I acquire? What can I put my marketing dollars behind? How am I thinking about how to publicize this book? Am I doing the same few listicles, or am I really trying to dig deeper into like the messaging and like how I can make this author, this voice shine? It's at the top in terms of deciding who gets paid and how. It's with HR and making sure that they hire more talent of color and also keep them. Because I think what we're seeing a lot here now with this great resignation is people are just tired. People are tired of having to fight. So much of publishing is opinion-based. And when you're giving your opinion about your own culture and someone who is not of that culture is telling you why you're wrong, that is very exhausting. And then when you look to the right and to the left and there is no one in the room to speak and like advocate for you because there's no one in the room who comes from the same background as you, that's even more exhausting. You know, like there's so many things that you're dealing with that you kind of feel like, well, you know what? I need a break. And who wouldn't? I like to say that even though I've been in publishing for 10 years, there's like the black tax. I feel like I've been in publishing for 20 because there are the things that I did in my day-to-day job that most people did. And then there are the extra things that I had to do. There are the conversations that I had to have with people internally. There are the secret conversations that I was having with authors who were freaking out about certain things that was happening to them that the publisher might have been too blind to see, or, you know, like all of those things were happening at once. And so it took a lot out of me. And so that retention part is really, really huge. And I don't have one answer for it, but I didn't go to school to be an HR rep, you know? So like is the onus is on these people who this is their job. This is what they're supposed to do. So if it's not working, you got to pivot. And I think a lot of people are exhausted and lazy and, you know, they're trying to figure it out, but they're also trying to figure it out within the confines of like what, like money. And there's a lot there, but there's so much there that it is really on everybody individually to like do their part in their respective roles. And I also think that just on the author side, like there is a lot of information that is not disseminated properly. And so I do feel sometimes, and I can say this now being on the side, for as much as I know, there were still certain things I didn't know. And I don't think people are like withholding information on purpose. I just think it's just the missing piece of publishing. Like, how are we getting this information out to people? And are we withholding it on purpose? Do we want to share it, but we just don't know how? I think those are other questions that we need to figure out how to answer. And I don't have the answer for it right now, but I do think a lot of publishing has shifted in a positive way and we'll continue to see the shift. It really is just a matter of like how long it takes, like how long will it take us to get to a place where we're all like, okay, finally, like there's proper representation going around.
Yeah. And it's amazing how many different layers there are to publishing. It's like when you're looking at it from like picking up a book on the shelf, you're like, oh, okay, someone just put this book out, but there are like a million different teams behind it. And so many different people who get to like put their opinion in. And it's a lot more than just like, just putting your book out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And who are the people putting their opinions out there? How, you know, like what is their position? How did they get there? Are they listening to other people in the room? I mean, it really is. I would say the one thing that I really would love publishing to do more of is to actually listen to the assistants and coordinators in the room. And because a lot of the assistants and coordinators are people of color. And what happens? They get into these roles, they get worn out, and they leave. And I noticed that a lot. The people that I came up with in the industry, it was funny. When I went to undergrad, one of the things that they said kind of like, it was a joke and but it also was really eye-opening in that like, you gotta make sure you are here for the right reasons. They would say, look to your right, look to your left, because you might not see this person next year. And I'm like, that's like, why would you say that? And then I'm like, sophomore year, I come back and it's just like, oh, such and such is gone. And then junior year, I come back and I'm like, oh my God, like more people left. And then senior year, you look up and you're like, I'm like one of the few people from my freshman class still here. Yeah. I feel like it was the same for me in publishing, where like I had this like group of friends who were like BIPOC who I came in with, and slowly but surely they just all stopped. They just left. And it was like, I love the field. A lot of them still loved it, but it was like, I don't love the money. I don't love the lack of exposure. I don't love not being heard. And this was constantly, like, I was constantly hearing this. And I do feel like that's a big part of it, where if these assistants, if these coordinators can be in these meetings, and as they're hearing, you know, executives who may be like well-intentioned, but they are a little detached from, you know, the realities of a community, of the buyer's market, of whatever, like, they could be able to speak up and say something and not feel like they would be reprimanded or not talked down upon, or, you know what I mean? Silence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Important that they feel like they can say something and be heard just the same way as if another executive was like putting in their two cents as well.
Yeah. Cause so much of it really is, especially for someone who feels afraid. The first few years of my career, like, there were times that I spoke up and I was hurt, and there were times that I wasn't. A lot of times I was not hurt. And also, it was in my approach too. I was really scared. Like, I was very shy. I'm also up against like executives trying to tell them something that they may or may not even understand or hear. Like I said earlier, communication is something that I am not the best at, but I've learned how to be better at. And so there were times where I just wasn't heard. The amount of times I would say something and someone else would say the same thing and they would be heard, I would have so much money right now if I could, like, the amount of times that I had to deal with that, it's insane. And I used to get frustrated to no end every single time. When I'm like, I just said that. I just wanted to stand up and scream. I literally just said that. Like, nobody heard me. But then I had to learn, okay, Ebony, then you got to change your approach. And so that's how I was able to sustain, because I just am a nutcase and I love publishing so much that I'm like, I'm just going to stick it out. But I do see that happen. And it's just like, you're automatically like invisible when you speak. And then someone else who has a, you know, more position of authority or is a more eloquent speaker says the same thing and they're hurt. So I do really need people to just like listen to people and also stand up. If someone just said the thing, like, how about you say, oh yeah, Tom just said that. Like, what is it to not give someone else the credit that they deserve for their idea, you know?
Yeah, like, give that person the credit because someone must have heard you.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's how you, and that's how you keep talent, you know?
Yeah. Pivoting back to your writing in Love Radio, I wanted to talk a bit about how you paint this vivid picture of Detroit. And I'm thinking specifically of the scene where Danny and Prince are skating. I loved that. It was so vivid and fun. And the energy was just leaping off the page. So
I was
wondering how, like, what details you chose to include, how you went about constructing that setting, because it really felt like it was all around us at all times, even when you weren't necessarily like pointing it out.
So it's funny because, you know, a lot of the marketing has been like a love letter to Detroit, and it really is. And then at the same time, and I said this at a Detroit event, and people were like, really? Like, shocked. When I first wrote Love Radio, I was not going to write it about Detroit. And it's because I lived there. So basically the way my childhood was set up growing up was my parents were divorced. And they had joint custody of me. So either I was with my mother for the school year and with my father for the summers, or vice versa. And so I had been with my mother for most of my childhood up until high school. And then I moved to Vegas with my father. And then I was back with my mother for the summers. And so I hadn't like really spent a significant amount of time in Detroit since like basically before I went to college. And because after that, my mom moved out. And so I was only going up there to visit, like, you know, like my father's family.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I'm like, there's no way I'm moving, or there's no way that I'm going to talk about a city that I haven't been in so long, because we don't have enough like representation of the city. And you know how it is when you're like one of the first people to like show a different rep of something that does not get enough love. You're going to be critiqued extra hard, or at least it feels that way. And that's fair, because there's not much, you know, there are not many alternatives. So I was like, I'm not going to write it. I'm not. It had been like something in the back of my head, and I just kept pushing it away until I determined that Prince was going to be a radio host that gave love advice. And that was due to me growing up in the city and listening to the radio. And radio and music is huge in Detroit. And so once I came up with that concept, I realized, okay, Ebony, this is, you're being silly. Like, how are you going to say, I was inspired about growing up in the city and then write about another city? You know, like, it just didn't make sense. So that's when I realized, okay, I'm going to do Detroit. And I was like, well, again, like I was saying earlier about writing and being afraid, it was like, well, let me just try it. And if I don't like it, I can switch to a fictional city. It's fine. Like, it's an easy cleanup. And then I just started thinking about all the things that I love doing growing up there. And going skating was one of them. Like, that was something that we did a lot. And I used to be a pretty good skater back in the day, not anymore. But it was just one of those times where I had so much fun because, you know, the city gets very cold very fast. And so you really have to do a lot of indoor activities. And so it's like, you know, going to the movies, hanging out at the mall, going skating, stuff like that. And so I felt like skating was really a good representation of how, like, lively the city can be, because you have music, which is like the heartbeat of the city. You have people who just like can dance their butt off, and they somehow translate that into skating, another thing that they're doing. And it was just like some of the best nights I remember were being on that floor and just having a dope DJ and dancing around and singing to the top of your lungs and skating and having a great time. So I knew pretty early on that was going to be one of the scenes that I wanted to put in my radio.
Well, it just felt so real. I was like, I want to be here. I want to do this. I can't skate to save my life. But I was like, I would love to give it a shot.
Thank you.
So you also hosted Why Not YA with Bellatrist and Epic Reads, where you interviewed YA authors. Can you talk a bit about how that came about? What led you to it? What you learned from talking to other authors? I just would love to hear about that experience, because it's very similar to kind of what I'm doing here. And I found it after I'd created this project. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. So
I love it. I'd love
to hear about your experience doing that.
Yeah. So this actually started from talking with Kara about, we reached out to them because I work at Harper, about seeing if there was a potential partnership opportunity with Bellatrist, because we love the work that they were doing in the adult space. And we were just like, I just wonder if there's anything that they would do at YA, especially with Emma and her career. You know, like, she's always been a supporter of YA literature and like the work that she was doing too, just in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so when we reached out to him and had a conversation with them, me and Kara hit it off immediately. Like, it was just weird how cool me and her got. Shout out to Kara. That's like one of my homies. And we were talking about the same thing, which is like, you know, YA doesn't get the credit that it deserves, but, you know, it sits right up there with adult. And so why not showcase it in a positive way? And why not use a platform like Bellatrist? Yeah. For them, it was no different than everybody else. It's just making sure that you're doing your right, that you have the bandwidth, that you have the support. And so when we told them that you have the support in Harper and Epic Reads, they're like, okay, let's do it. And then the next thing Kara says is like, yeah, I'll interview. And Ebony, you'll interview with me. And I was like, oh. Okay. Like, because I didn't want to, I had done a couple of things. Part of like working at Harper and working with Epic Reads is, it was a small and mighty team. That was like one of the best times that I've had working in publishing, if I was being honest, because I worked with a lot of smart people who were like young and scrappy, and we knew how to get a lot done. Yeah. And we also had a lot of people who were like in front of the camera, because it's like, we have to promote these books in some way. And it just happened to work out that a lot of people who were like in front of the cameras were also like dynamic and funny, and so it just created a really strong brand. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't unheard of for someone, you know, internally to also be the face of a video series or something like that, but it still was really scary. And because I hadn't intended for that to really be a thing. And then when she said it, I was like, you know what, Ebony, like,
you want to be a writer anyway, why not use this opportunity to just ask questions? Like, it's, I know you know, it's kind of really nice to just ask an author a question and sit there and let them just talk about it.
It is.
And just so, but it's also, I was like, this sounds like me today is someone who's like, okay, I'll do this interview, but like 3 years ago, please. I'd be like, really? Are you sure? I don't know. Cause then I have to talk, you know, I have to talk about my process and all these things. And I'm just like, that's just not what I normally do. Mm-hmm. So it was really helpful for me to hear from them. Just in general, like I was asking the questions I would want to ask them, period. Yeah. Whether we were doing this interview or not. And also I've read their books and loved them. So it made it easy to ask the questions. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking how me and Kara would do an interview and an author would be like, thank you so much for like actually reading the book. And I'm just like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? Do you not have people read your books when they interview you? Like, why did they choose to interview you? So it was a really fun experience. And I'm happy I did it because it helped me be more comfortable in like front of cameras. It helped me be comfortable in just talking to different authors. And some of them I already had a rapport with. So it was really nice to just like be on the side where I could help like amplify their work in like a marketing way, but like do it in a way that's fun, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And in a way that feels very like human. That's part of why I wanted to do like for a thesis project. A lot of times it's, you know, just a very long paper. And I was like, where's, mm-hmm. you know, the human aspect of talking to the people who have made the category what it is. Like I am no expert, but like these people are writing in it. So why, you know, let's mm-hmm. talk to them. Let's hear from them. And there's such a humanity in just having a conversation.
That's so true.
That's really, really special. So I was wondering, like, is there an interview in that that you did that sticks out to you?
Oh, that's a really good question. Oh, that's so hard. I'm trying to think. I would say the first one that comes to mind that sticks out would be Mary H.K. Choi.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was like the first interviewer that we did. We basically kind of shifted the way that we were, you know, doing YA, and we were like, okay, well, let's try to do like little short segments, you know, just because social media, and yep. you gotta like, you know, switch things with the times. And that was my first time meeting. I think that was my first time meeting her. Yeah, because I'll never forget. She walked in the Facebook offices, and the first thing she said was "nice kicks," and I was like, "See, I knew I liked her." Knew it. But also, like, I remember that interview because it was just so fluid. And, you know, this is also a rom-com writer, a romance writer. And the way that she talked about, like, you know, New York and how she incorporates the setting and just her past experience writing and being in the music industry, like writing for music, all of those things, like, made her just incredibly compelling. And she's just a really, like, when she talks, it's brilliant. Like, she could talk about snacks and you're just like, oh, I've learned something completely new and different today. And I feel like a better person for it. So shout out to Mary. If you don't follow her on social, she's always critiquing apples, which I'm like, listen, this is really helpful information to know. And she'll do these things. She hasn't done it recently, which probably means she's hard at working on something, but she'll do these things where she'll have you pick snacks, like her favorite snacks. It's like this or that. But yeah, that's the one I remember the most. But I just also remember the way that she talked about like love and like loving yourself and, you know, intimacy. Mm-hmm. It was really beautiful. And also, like, I guess it was kind of a lesson in craft a little bit as I was interviewing her. Yeah.
So a similar kind of style question. Well, I guess my first question is, what's the book that made you fall in love with reading?
The Skin I'm In by Sharon. Like, that was my book. I mean, there were books that I read way before then that was like, you know, Goosebumps, Boxcar Children, all that stuff. I was into it. But that was the first book that made me feel like, oh, there also can be a book for me. And mm-hmm. I know we always hear that about representation. But I lived
at that point in my life, like I lived in the, in mostly Black city, you know, everybody around me looked like me. Mm-hmm. And I would read books and they would feel like it was this like really amazing thing that I liked to do that a lot of my classmates didn't like to do. And I realized a lot of them didn't like to do it because they're like, this ain't even about us. I'm like, but you don't want to read about these children in the woods and they just like learn how to survive in a box car. And they're just like, no, like, I don't care about that. And I'm like, but I do, you know, yeah. But also I felt like they're right. You know, I love this stuff. Like I love reading about all these different people, but also can I read about myself too? You know, like, yeah. I don't understand why that's so far fetched. So that was the first book where I was like, oh, this is actually something that is possible, that there are writers out there doing this. And like, this was also me while on the side drafting my own little stories. Mm-hmm. And so it really shaped like the type of, it helped me learn that like I could be a writer and that there are stories that I could tell that completely can be about me and for my community. And that's okay.
That's amazing. I love that answer. Just tugs at my heartstrings.
Thank you.
My other question, similar, is what are some of your favorite young adult books that you've read recently?
This is such a good question and so hard. I would say recently, I have read, so there is one by Jazz Hammond, When We Were Monuments. But I've started reading that and I'm already loving it. And I met Jazz at I think a couple of conferences at this point, and we just hit it off immediately. Mm-hmm. But I had been hearing like whispers about mm-hmm. this book, and their editor is a Black editor, Makisha, someone that I know and love dearly. And so, and I know Makisha's work and the type of books that they promote, and this is like one of, you know, Makisha's like big titles.
Yeah.
So I already knew from that like, okay, this is going to be a book to watch. We Deserve Monuments is the name of the book.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm excited to read it.
Yeah. So that is one that I love. I also love, and I've been talking about this book for a little bit, Deep in Providence by Reese Nelson. That's one that I read that I love. It's very, and it's perfect now, just in time for spooky season. Cause it's like, I love to say it gives craft vibes. The Craft, which is one of my favorite movies. So that was another one that I read recently that I loved. I'm trying to think. It doesn't have to come out this year, right? You're just
saying, no, just any that like come general, to your mind. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there are any romances that come to mind. I mean, we were just talking about Mary. Emergency Contact is easily like one of my favorite romances.
Yeah, it's a fabulous book. When you said her name, I was like, oh yes, yes.
Yeah. I love that one. Trying to think what else. One that I feel like people know about, but it's still a sleeper, is Where the Rhythm Takes You. That one came out a few years ago by Sarah Das, and it's set in an island, it's set in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And it's about a singer coming back home, and like it's sort of like this like love loss situation where he's reconnected with someone from his childhood. And it's just a beautiful, like, music books can be a hard sell. I say that as someone who kind of wrote a music book, but the way that like the author, you know, immerses the music and the culture of the city or the island versus, you know, the love story, I really, really love. And another one that I love, I interviewed for this one for Why Not YA, is Never Look Back by Lillian Rivera. Yes. That is another one that I absolutely love. And it's supposed to be, like reimagining Greek mythology. Mm. So that is one I recommend for sure too.
Oh, so many great recommendations. I'm going
but you caught me off guard. You see how it took me a second?
No, I love it.
I literally had to get up and look at my bookshelf and be like, Ebony, stop acting like you haven't read books. Okay, this is what you do.
It's so hard. The moment someone is like, so a book recommendation, I'm like, me reading a book in my life?
Okay, what genre, what is it about? It's kind of like when you read a book that you love and then like months later, someone's like, what is the book about? And you're like, I know what this book is about, but why did you ask me right now? Because I cannot remember what this book is about.
Yeah, like what the plot? No, I can read that. But yeah, no, can't tell you a word about it. So I've had such a fun time talking to you today, and I just have one final question. It's, if you could only read one book for the rest of your life, which one would it be and why?
I don't know. Oh God. I don't know if I have an answer for you.
It's hard. I've been asking everyone this question and everyone has the same response, which is like, I can't choose.
I mean, I really can't choose. Has anybody chosen anything? Now I'm curious.
One, Gail Forman chose one book. I can't remember what the title of it was, but she had it like right off the top of her head. She was like, that would definitely be it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna have to go with everybody else and say, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I could possibly choose one book for the rest of my life. So
there's so many good ones out there.
Disappointing.
Well, Ebony, thank you so much for talking to me today and just giving me amazing answers to all of my questions. I feel like I learned so much from you. And
aww, thank you.
I want to thank you again.
Of course. Thank you for reaching out to me. Thank you. And I'm really excited to hear what you learn, your findings. So please keep me posted, because this is the marketing nerd in me, research and all that jazz. I love to find out and collect data and then figure out the best way to use it. So I'm really excited to see what you collect and what you take from it. So please keep me posted.
I absolutely will. I'm going to be putting it all together on like a website with some scholarship research and reader response and your interview as well. So
perfect. Perfect. I can't wait to see it.
So like I said at the beginning, Ebony gives so much great information on publishing, on writing, on the field, diversity, inclusion. There's just amazing stuff happening in the conversation the whole time. And I enjoyed talking to her so much. She was such an incredible person. And I hope that you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. All right, I'll see you here next time. Bye.